we have to be very, very careful. What we're talking is not so much democracy, we're talking organised hypocrisy. Hard facts.
President Trump ordering strikes on Syria.
American, British and French warships and planes launching dozens of missiles targeting the Syrian regime's chemical weapons sites.
A short time ago, I ordered the United States Armed Forces to launch precision strikes on targets associated with the chemical weapons capabilities of Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad.
The point is also of the legality of doing it, because if we want to get the moral high ground around the world, as a member of the Security Council, as a country with a long tradition of international involvement, shall we say, then we have to abide by international law.
I've just been in the town of Douma. I found the clinic where the film of the children stopping at the mouth and having water thrown at them was made. But the senior hospital doctor, who actually spoke very good English, who was there, told me that the video is real, that they were not suffering from gas poisoning, but suffering from panic and hypoxia, as he put it, because of the amount of dust in the tunnels in which they lived.
The day before he filed his report from Douma, which you were just listening to, Robert Fisk was considered one of the finest and most distinguished foreign correspondents, not only of this generation, but any generation. The day after he filed his report from the site of the alleged chemical weapons attack by Syrian government forces, Robert Fisk became a crank, a liar, a stooge, and a sadist and conspiracy theorist. Such is the terrain we are on with these crazed neocons, people who haven't come across a country in the global south that could not be improved by a shower of Tomahawk cruise missiles. The meaning of the military attack unleashed by the US, UK and France against Syria on April 14th, 2018 could not be more stark. It marks an alarming descent towards international banditry, such as the world hasn't seen since the 1930s. Three permanent members of the UN Security Council embarked on military action against a sovereign state, the Syrian state, without any UN authorization or sanction. Thus, the action taken was, per the UN Charter, a clear and flagrant violation of international law. And as for the justification of humanitarian intervention, which those same Western governments prayed in aid of this missile strike, let us here nail something once and for all. There is no legal category of humanitarian intervention within any treaty or provision of existing international law. It is an entirely spurious and self-serving justification for illegal military action beyond and outwith the sanction of the UN. The attack on Syria by the US, UK and France was nothing more than an act of raw aggression, led by a Washington neocon establishment that has long arrogated to itself the right to rule the world. It was less to do with sending a message to Damascus and more to do with sending a message to Moscow, namely that the unipolarity of Western hegemony will not go into that good night without a hard-fought struggle. And as for the dissembling that was deployed to justify this aggression against Syria, this reached its apogee when Theresa May cited, quote, open source reporting as a credible source of intelligence in support of the assertion that Syrian government forces had unleashed the alleged chemical weapons attack. In truth, open source reporting amounts to jihadis, including the White Helmets, with camera phones and a direct line to Western intelligence agencies. In truth, there was no verifiable or credible intelligence provided that could possibly have justified this strike. None whatsoever. It was a war crime. Adding to the moral turpitude that underpins the West's role in Syria is the fact that Daesh militants, entrenched in another suburb of Damascus, took advantage of the missile strike to mount an attack on Syrian army positions. And staying with Daesh, the self-same Robert Fisk reveals that on the 27th of March, 116 Syrian soldiers were captured by the Salafi Jihadi group, having strayed into the aforementioned suburb in the mistaken belief the area was safe. The soldiers were marched off and executed. Some of them, according to Fisk, were shot, others beheaded. Daesh, Nusra, Al-Qaeda, Jaish al-Islam. This missile strike benefited no one apart from these groups. Groups driven by the most heinous ideology and methodology the world has seen since the Khmer Rouge were rampaging across Cambodia in the 1970s. Thus, to all intents, the West has entered a pact with hell. I'm John White, and this is Hard Facts. Markus Papadopoulos is no stranger to this show. He is a journalist and broadcaster and also the editor of Politics First magazine. Now, Markus, I'd like to start with referencing the treatment of Robert Fisk, who, as I said, I think we would agree, he is widely considered to be one of the most estimable and distinguished foreign correspondents of this and any generation. Suddenly, after his report from the site of the alleged chemical weapons attack in Douma, the actual hospital where the footage was taken of the children in distress, suddenly he's a crank and a sadist and a conspiracy theorist. What does that tell you about our mainstream media?
Robert Fisk is a leading authority on Syria and indeed the rest of the Arab world. And he has been a leading authority for decades now. He intimately knows Arab society. He intimately knows Arab culture. He is very, very well versed in the complexities of the Arab world. The reality is that Robert Fisk, whilst being no friend to the Syrian government or indeed any other Arab government, is a true journalist. But the journalists who are now attacking him from both the conservative press in the UK and the liberal press in the UK are not genuine journalists. They are nothing but ideologically driven foot soldiers of the British establishment, there to destroy the name, the reputation, the credibility of anyone who challenges the narrative that they peddle.
But yet there's so much scepticism abroad when it comes to this particular issue and other issues concerning Western foreign policy. I wonder if this was something that was lying latent after Iraq and has only erupted on the back of this latest in a litany of foreign policy adventures, one that I would argue is by far the most dangerous of that litany, including Iraq.
I think there is a lot of scepticism amongst ordinary people in Britain, for example, and that was demonstrated with the opinion polls taken recently, which categorically showed that the vast majority of the British public were against military intervention in Syria. Now, why is that? Well, I think it's because of alternative media outlets like Sputnik, like RT. Then there is also the extremely powerful phenomenon of social media. And people in Washington and London feel very threatened by alternative media outlets and social media. And what do they resort to? The ultimate weapon in their arsenal to discredit anything that alternative media or what social media is saying is to refer to it as conspiracy theories. Well, conspiracy theories have been used by the British and the American governments, historically speaking, to stifle any discussion that they feel uncomfortable about, that they feel threatened about, that can undermine their narrative. So we have to keep on battling on against what is a ferocious opponent, but it is a weakened opponent. I remember the days of the 1990s when the British and the Americans were able to do what they wanted in the world. For example, starting in the former Yugoslavia, there was no way of challenging them, John, apart from going to Trafalgar Square, which is what I did in 1999 during the bombing of Serbia. But that was it. So whilst today mainstream media in Britain, for instance, is still the dominant media force, it is a weakened force.
Just staying with that, Marcus, do you think that this, as I do actually, that this military strike was actually a symptom of the weakness and the decline of Western hegemony rather than its power? Because it seems that they're so desperate because of the emergence of Russia and China and the fact that their own people, we've just touched upon, are so sceptical about what they're up to, about their agenda. We have ever more deepening crises, not only overseas, but also at home in the US. You have the moral sickness of racism, you have police violence, ever more regular bouts of mass shootings, obscene inequality throughout the West, a crisis of neoliberalism, Brexit, the rise of the far right across Europe.
I definitely believe there is truth in that. Firstly, it is a way of distracting the British public and the American public too from very serious domestic problems. So in Britain, there are 14 million people, John, living in poverty. There is something like 3.5 to 4 million children in the UK living below the breadline. That is absolutely scandalous. In America, there are 44 million Americans living in poverty. So coming up with this idea that Syria is this horrendous, murderous, genocidal state is a way of taking public opinion away from that. Secondly, there's no question about it that America and its junior partner in the world, Britain, does feel threatened by the resurgent Russian state, because in 2018, the Russia that we see now is totally different to the Russia of the 1990s. Whilst Russia still has a long way to go in fully resurrecting its superpower status that it had in Soviet times, the American power in the world is now being checked. Also as well, the Americans want to ensure their dominance of the Middle East, and they are concerned by an unofficial alliance which has emerged since 2015 in the region. And that alliance, unofficial alliance, of course, it involves Syria, Russia and Iran. So you're right, firing those 110 or so cruise missiles was, yes, of course, sending a message to Damascus, but also sending a message to Moscow and Tehran.
You're listening to Marcus Papadopoulos. This is Hard Facts. We'll be right back.
We have to be very, very careful. What we're talking is not so much democracy, we're talking organised hypocrisy. Hard Facts.
Welcome back to the second half of Hard Facts. I'm sitting down in the company of journalist and broadcaster Marcus Papadopoulos, and we are discussing the fallout from the illegal missile strike that was unleashed by the US, UK and France against Syria over the alleged chemical weapons attack against the town of Douma on the outskirts of Damascus. Marcus, I want to talk about Operation Crossways. Operation Crossways was revealed to have been taking place in Yemen, involving 50 British Army personnel training Saudi military forces. It was reported by the Daily Mail in November of last year. Now, the relationship between Britain and the Saudis, as you know, is so close that it's beyond description. In fact, it's a malign relationship. It is mired in corruption. It is mired in sleaze, arms sales, investment, security contracts, and of course, the provision of British Army personnel to help train Saudi armed forces and help maintain the equipment that they sell them, billions and billions of pounds. Now, you will recall the unprecedented red carpet welcome that was provided to Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman by the British government, led by Theresa May, a couple of months ago. It was actually nauseating. There were actually ads carried on the side of black cabs in London, billboard ads on the underground, trying to put lipstick on the pig of this kleptocracy in Riyadh. Jaish al-Islam, which was the dominant Salafi jihadi group in Ghouta and which was dominant in Douma, they are a Saudi proxy. That is well known. Now, put that together with the revelation that a British SAS sergeant was killed in northern Syria on March 30th. No one knew up to that point that British troops were actually operating on the ground in Syria. Do you see where I'm going with this, Marcus?
Yes, I do. And it further corroborates what is by now a very, very well-established fact, that Britain has a strategic relationship with radical Islam, and this goes back over decades. The British were one of the key supporters of the Mujahideen, including Osama bin Laden, against the Soviets in Afghanistan in the 1980s. Britain played an important role in facilitating the arrival of Mujahideen fighters from Afghanistan to Bosnia during the Bosnian Civil War. Britain, of course, bombed Colonel Gaddafi's forces in 2011 in aid of al-Qaeda forces on the ground there. Britain is supporting all the different Islamist Wahhabist terrorist groups in Syria, including ISIS and including the Free Syrian Army. Now, in regard to Saudi Arabia, Britain has no moral right whatsoever to talk about human rights owing to its exceptionally close relationship to Saudi Arabia. I watched the debate in the House of Commons after Theresa May gave her statement on why Britain participated in airstrikes against Syria. And I was just sickened. I was appalled by MP after MP after MP, Conservative and Labour, standing up, justifying the military strike against Syria. But these same people, John, were the ones who met with the Saudi Crown Prince this March, Mohammed bin Salman, when he visited London. They were grovelling before him. Many of them went to the Saudi Arabian embassy. And these same MPs say nothing about the children and the babies in Yemen that are torn to shreds. And I mean that, torn to shreds on a daily basis by the Saudi Arabian military using British weapons. Not one of those MPs has ever stood in the chamber and called for Britain to stop selling arms to Saudi Arabia. Not one of them has ever said that in light of Saudi Arabia's massacring of Yemeni children, should Britain reassess its relationship. So quite frankly, no British official, no British politician has any moral right to talk about human rights. And let me say one other thing as well, John. Most mosques in the UK are believed to be under the control of the Saudis. In 1997, the Grand Mufti of Syria paid a visit to London. He spoke at a London mosque. He spoke at the largest synagogue in the UK. He spoke at a church, and he said that most mosques in Britain are under the control of the Saudis, and therefore the minds of Muslim people in Britain are being poisoned. That was the comment, the statement of a visionary.
There is definitely a growing understanding that there is something wrong with the extent to which the Saudis and Gulf states in overall are wielding influence, whether it's on the level of ideology, whether it's on the level of economics. But there's certainly something rotten. And certainly now, with Britain mired in a Brexit economic uncertainty, that economic relationship with the Saudis takes on even more importance, with the centrality of the arms sales I just mentioned to BAE Systems. They don't benefit our society, they benefit the arms dealers. Now, James Lemessurier, Marcus, is another character straight out of a Bond novel. The former British Army officer, educated and trained at the prestigious British Army Officer Training School of Sandhurst. He also had a career as a private military contractor with the notorious private security firm Blackwater. And he pops up in 2013 to establish the White Helmets after a meeting with members of the Syrian National Council, the preeminent exile Syrian opposition group at that time in Istanbul. And we're expected to believe that this, the White Helmets, the group that they spawned off that meeting, that's funded by Western governments and various other institutions and organisations, we're expected to believe that this is a legitimate civil defence organisation, which just happens to be operating exclusively in opposition-controlled territory, and which is a main source for all the war atrocity porn that is issued out of these opposition areas, where no Western journalist would dare set foot, knowing that if they did, they would likely be abducted, tortured and murdered. Tell me about the White Helmets, Marcus.
John, the British are past masters of deception, of manipulation, of divide and rule. They perfected those ways during the British Empire. That's a key reason as to why the British Empire was so powerful, why it lasted so long. Now, in regard to the White Helmets, that is a typical product of the British establishment, there to put out disinformation, there to deceive ordinary people, not just in Britain, but in the wider world. But on this occasion, I don't believe the British have done a particularly good job when it comes to the White Helmets, because the British government based its case for striking Syria on one source and one source only, the White Helmets. Well, the White Helmets has been categorically exposed to be a fraudulent organization, a facade, one that masquerades as emergency rescue workers, but in fact is nothing but a propaganda outfit of the various Islamist Wahhabist terrorist groups. There is independent footage which has been verified by independent sources showing one day White Helmet personnel wearing their white helmets. The next day, they're standing under the flag of ISIS, of Al-Qaeda, brandishing Kalashnikovs, brandishing RPGs, standing over the bodies of dead Syrian soldiers whom they have either just killed in battle or whom they have executed. No proper court of law anywhere in the world, John, would accept testimony from the White Helmets, because the White Helmets is not an independent, impartial source. Their evidence would be deemed inadmissible by any proper court in the world. So there is no case for the British having gone to strike Syria. What they should have done is allowed the OPCW to have carried out a full, fair and impartial investigation of what happened in Douma, if indeed anything did happen there. And let us not forget, the OPCW were invited by both the Russian and Syrian governments. But lo and behold, the British did not want that investigation to go ahead. Why? Because they knew it would completely contradict their argument that a chemical weapons attack had taken place, and it would further put spotlight on the credibility, on the reliability of the White Helmets.
Just to clarify, Robert Fisk's report, it wasn't very clear, the sound quality wasn't the best. He did say that he spoke to one of the doctors in the basement in the location, the hospital in Douma, where this chemical weapons attack was meant to have struck, where the victims of the chemical weapons attack were being treated in the aftermath, the children. And he said the children were afflicted, but they were afflicted by smoke inhalation from conventional airstrikes. And then during the process of them being treated, one of the White Helmets ran in and shouted, "Gas, gas," and they all went into a pre-rehearsed gas or chemical weapons attack drill. And that was the footage that was used and prayed in aid of the military strike. And it's the main footage that's been used by Western governments to support their view that the Syrian government forces were responsible. Now, this is a very interesting point, Marcus. Theresa May has now entered into our political discourse. Highly likely. It was used in the case of the Skripal poisoning. Highly likely that the Russian state was responsible, and highly likely that Syrian government forces were. This is unbelievable. And what Theresa May has done, especially with her statement in the Commons, which you mentioned, at which you were present as a journalist, she has now trashed international law and the UN Security Council, because she says that the reason that they bypassed the UNSC was because they don't want to give Russia a veto on their foreign policy. This is tantamount to ripping up the UN Charter, throwing it in the bin, isn't it? We're now back in the 1930s, Marcus. I mentioned that in my introduction, where Might is Right was the driver of foreign policy. And it led ineluctably then to the maw of the Second World War. Are we headed for the same kind of cataclysm, Marcus?
I don't believe that will happen. I don't believe there's anyone in Washington or London, for example, that wants a war with Russia, because a conventional war with Russia would quickly develop into a nuclear conflict, and a nuclear conflict would destroy the entire planet. However, that said, there could be a misinterpretation. There could be an accident which sparks a war. Because let's not forget, leading up to World War I, no one in Berlin or Vienna or London or Paris wanted a world war. But of course, there was a spark. So these are very, very dangerous times. Britain, historically speaking, has never been sincerely committed to international law or the United Nations Charter. There are so many examples, especially in the last quarter of a century, from former Yugoslavia to Iraq, to Libya, to Yemen, to Syria. But going back to Robert Fisk, I defy any journalist in Britain, from mainstream media, from The Guardian to The Times to The Telegraph to Sky News, Channel 4 News, BBC News, I defy them to visit Douma and to speak with the doctors and the nurses in that hospital, to record their interviews live with them. I defy them to do that, because if they did do that, then we would know what people on the ground in the hospital in question saw on that day. If they don't do that, that is yet another piece of evidence to show that they are nothing but ideologically driven foot soldiers who care nothing about journalism, who care nothing about international law, who care nothing about the United Nations Charter. They care nothing about Syria. What they care about is two things. Number one, seeing the survival of American global hegemony, and secondly, seeing their own bank accounts and their own profiles rise and rise and rise. They are the two things they care about, not the Syrian people.
You've been listening to Marcus Papadopoulos. I'm John White. Until next time, remember, the only facts worth taking seriously are hard facts.